Welcome to Mastering Your 30s, a podcast to guide women in their 30s about how to relax, enjoy the ride, and make investments for their future health, wealth, and well-being, and for women beyond their 30s to share their wisdom and experience with others. I am Alev Bakan, health and nutrition coach and founder of Health & Co. Today, my guest is Valerie. She is a seasoned nurse, health educator, and the founder of Genuine Glow Wellness, a company committed to guiding individuals with osteoarthritis towards a healthier, more empowered life. Her own journey with OA began at 27 and deeply affected her life. As an avid hiker and rock climber, yes, you heard it right, Valerie faced moments where her dreams seemed endangered due to her condition. This fear ignited her determination to leverage her education and professional experience, diving deep into research and applying lifestyle changes to her own life. Now she is sharing all her experience and also how she helps her clients with OA and with also life-changing moments with her carefully designed programs. If you have a stressful, high-action job, especially with lack of sleep, this episode is especially for you. Valerie walked us through her 30s and told us about what she could have done differently. But if you just want a quick little summary about this, there are four things to keep in mind from this episode. These are nutrition, stress, sleep, and learning to say no, which are essential tools for your well-being and also for advocating your own health. Hi, Valerie. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much. Welcome. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Can you please tell us about yourself?
All right. So, my name is Valerie, and I am very close to, almost 50. I'm nearing 50, just in a couple of months.
Yeah.
I am a registered nurse for, you know, my entire adult life. I went to nursing school right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've proceeded since then to expand my education, and I have my bachelor's degree in health education and a master's degree in nursing. So more recently, you know, I'll talk about my journey, which has brought me here, is that I was diagnosed with osteoarthritis when I was 27. And at that point, I was just getting into the outdoors. You know, the outdoors really saved me, you know, pulled me out of the bars and the party life and stuff like that. And when I was just starting to hike, I was diagnosed with osteoarthritis in both my knees.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor at that time, she told me to, you know, just put my feet up and relax,
mm-hmm.
which was not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So all through my 30s, I continued to do what I wanted, but probably not living the lifestyle that I needed to be able to keep doing what I wanted to do without causing further damage. So fast forward to my 40s, you know, my joints got worse. Knee pain started to limit me. And then it got to the point, you know, just a few years ago when it got pretty bad. And, you know, I started thinking this was it. You know, I was going to be in a wheelchair in a couple of years. And that led me to do a lot of research on osteoarthritis and what really causes it. You know, everything that I knew as a nurse was wrong. And there's been a lot of research done in the last 20 years since I graduated from nursing school. And I discovered that there was a lot of lifestyle changes that I could do to improve my symptoms. So I did that. I implemented that. You know, it was also a lot of, you know, having to adopt habits and having to overcome emotional eating and you know, a lot of like past traumas that kept me stuck in a pattern of self-sabotage. But I was able to accomplish all that. And I really turned my osteoarthritis around. And at almost 50, I'm really avid rock climber now. I love rock climbing. Rock climbing is my passion. And like in the last couple of years, I've been able to climb my hardest. I keep getting better. My joints today feel better than they did when I was 27.
Wow.
So that really motivated me to share this with other people. And I left my job and I started a business, Genuine Glow Wellness, where I help people with osteoarthritis, learn first, empower themselves with knowledge, and then also help them adopt the lifestyle habits that will help them improve their symptoms and thrive with osteoarthritis.
Okay.
And so I know osteoarthritis, I don't know if I'm pronouncing right, but it's a kind of known thing, but we don't know like the real symptoms and what is causing it and how can we know if we have osteoarthritis. Can you please start explaining about what is osteoarthritis and what are the major symptoms that identify it?
Okay, so osteoarthritis is a form of arthritis. There's over 100 different types of arthritis. Osteoarthritis is by far the most common. Mm-hmm. And it also is kind of set apart from the rest of the arthritis because all the other arthritises, they're autoimmune. Mm-hmm. So they're where your body's immune system attacks your own tissues. Mm-hmm. Osteoarthritis is different where it's more of like an inflammatory process. So similar, but different. Most common symptoms is joint pain. I started noticing that my knees were hurting. That's what brought me to the doctor, especially after, a big weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Joint stiffness is another problem.
Mm-hmm.
Joints will be stiff. Joints will start making noises. Mm-hmm. My knees are very loud, but they're still, I don't think that's a lot of people, that worries a lot of people when they can hear their joints moving.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's too much to be concerned about as long as, the symptoms that limit you are well controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's mostly, joint pain and stiffness and a lack of mobility. Joint stiffness that's worse in the morning. And it tends, you tend to loosen up after about 30 minutes or so of movement.
Okay. And you said you first diagnosed with osteoarthritis at age 27, right?
27, yes.
Yeah, is this a common age or what is the general age?
That's very young. But people do get diagnosed younger than me. And the risk increases with age.
I see.
So, not many people will be diagnosed in their 20s. A little more will be in their 30s, 40s, and then, of course, over 50s. And especially for women, the risk increases a lot after menopause.
I see. And I know that you have some, programs that help women. So is your program helping women with osteoarthritis or helping prevent it or can you please tell us about it?
Yes. So, first of all, I have my program that I'm going to have coming out is I'm trying to make it co-ed.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a Facebook group for women with osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much covers a lot. I'm over 1,300 members now.
Wow.
So it's really good. It's women with osteoarthritis. If you search it, mm-hmm. Facebook will pull it up now. It comes up as one of the first results. And, you know, there I'll talk about anything, you know, prevention, what to do if you already have it. You know, most people aren't aware of it. They don't, until their joints start hurting, they don't really think about their joints. So prevention is, it doesn't happen very often. One area that I would like to target is people who have had an injury, a joint injury, because anyone that's had like an ACL injury or a torn meniscus, which happens a lot, they're at a greater risk. And there are things that they can do to lower the chance that they will develop osteoarthritis later in life.
Well, so you have your Facebook group and you have also your program, right?
Yes, and now I have a program, and it is a membership program for people with osteoarthritis, and it's a comprehensive program. It talks about all the lifestyle factors that can affect osteoarthritis. So diet is a big one. You know, the, what we eat affects our body immensely, and it affects the greater environment of our body, which in turn affects our joints. So diet is huge. Activity is huge, a big part of it. You know, getting consistent movement, daily movement. You know, this is one of the mistakes that I probably made back in my 30s, was not getting daily movement. Being the weekend warrior is not a good thing. And also stress and sleep and all these things that can contribute to how much inflammation we have in our bodies, which translates to how much inflammation that we have in our joints, but also how the cells in our cartilage function.
I see. Well, so is there any type of food? For example, I sometimes hear that dairy attacks the joint a lot. You know, they have an immense effect on the joints, and you know, with some doctors, they recommend cutting off dairy for some kind of illnesses. Do you think that also has an effect on osteoarthritis?
So dairy,
or any other? Can you talk about any?
Yeah. So the big types of foods that can hurt your joints is you know, sugar is a big one, and that's all types of sugar. You know, just this question just came up in my group today about, well, honey's okay. Honey is still a sugar. Maple syrup is still a sugar. It's a substance that's extracted from a plant and concentrated in order to make it sweeter so that we like it more. So sugar, processed meat is a big one. So any preserved meat, like deli meat, you know, jerky, which I ate copious amounts of as a hiker, and a backpacker. You know, meat in general, you know, all meat has an inflammatory response. Your body has an inflammatory response to all meat. So, but we still need protein. So it's important to find more, you know, less inflammatory protein sources. A lot of people don't want to give up meat, but, you know, it can greatly be reduced how much we eat. You know, trans fat is a big one, which is, you know, they're trying to phase it out, but it's still present in a lot of foods. And then, like, when it comes to dairy, so the thing with dairy is it can be high in saturated fat. So is to limit, you know, my recommendation is to limit saturated fat to less than 15 grams a day. Dairy is, you know, aside from the fat, dairy is an individual. Some people have a problem with it. Some people don't. I think it's greater than 50% will have a problem, especially as we age, because our body starts to produce less lactase, which is the enzyme that we need to break down dairy, the sugar in dairy. So as that production decreases with age, with some people, dairy may start to become a problem. So it's, you know, it's really important with a lot of these foods is to, you know, there's some that are universal. They cause inflammation in everybody. You know, it's been proven by science, you know, these highly processed foods, refined flour, sugar, trans fats, you know, most of these unnatural foods are they're not really food, they're food products. But there's also this whole category of foods like dairy that, you know, people have to pay attention to how they respond.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that, you know, I am suspecting that I might have osteoarthritis. What steps should I follow?
I think it's important to get a diagnosis, to go to the doctor, especially if you're younger, if you're in your 30s, because that's, you know, they're going to have to work that up. As people get older, imaging isn't really necessary, but I think at a younger age, it probably is. And, you know, that's because you want to make sure that you're not, you're ruling out anything else.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Right, because so much can happen that can cause joint pain that isn't osteoarthritis. And I also think it's a good idea for anyone who's diagnosed very young to also have a rheumatology consult to rule out any of these other types of arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, because that treatment is very different. And there's actually more treatment options available for the autoimmune than there is for osteoarthritis. And I think it's a really good idea to, you know, talk to the doctor and take those treatment options or consider those treatment options if you have one of those other forms of arthritis, because the joint damage that you get from these other types of arthritis can lead to osteoarthritis.
So, but like when you say hiking and osteoarthritis, I cannot, you know, imagine them together. So how did you manage to continue your hiking journey? It like started actually after your diagnosis, right?
Were you hiking? I just started. So maybe like a year, I was hiking a year, and then, you know, I started to notice that I had pain, and and that's what happened. So, you know, I'll say through my 30s, I pretty much just put up with it. I loved it. It wasn't an option for me to stop. You know, there were times where things would flare up and I would have to take like a little break, you know, just because, you know, at some point it's not enjoyable, right? If you're in too much pain. But I was able to do a lot with it. You know, there was kind of like a wall there to how fast I could. I was always slow going down. I would go up faster than I could go down up a mountain. But I was able to do a lot. You know, I really wish I knew then what I know now, because, you know, I think I would have been able to do a lot more.
Nutrition wise, or
Nutrition wise, and the stress and the sleep. You know, in my 30s, up until I was 34 or so, I worked night shifts. Which, you know, I look back now, I worked night shift for 14 years, and you know, a lack of sleep really affects our bodies, and can affect the joints and can affect pain and can affect inflammation. You know, that's one of the things I would have changed, is getting off of night shift. I used to work all day, all night. I'd get out of work at 7 a.m. and my dog would be waiting in the parking lot.
Oh my God.
And we would head up and we would go and, you know, hike 16 miles.
Oh my God.
And which probably wasn't the smartest thing.
Well, yeah. And your job also requires a lot of, like you said, has a lot of stress in it.
Yeah.
A lot of physical action in it. So can you also tell us about this area of your life a little bit, you know, being in your 30s and being a nurse? What would you recommend now, maybe to nurses who are listening or people who are thinking about a career in that field?
So, you know, I look back and, you know, I think this could be with any high stress job. And nursing is really tough, and the medical field is really tough, because, you know, I was always a perfectionist, and that adds stress because you're trying to be perfect. You're trying to excel. You're trying to, you know, I had to be the charge nurse. I had to, you know, be the best. And it is important to not make mistakes when you're a nurse. But, you know, not taking stuff so much to heart And also leaving time for stress management, for like, you know, a mindfulness practice or something. And I got that out, definitely got that outdoors, like once I was outside.
Mm-hmm.
There was that release, but I paying more attention to that, even in the middle of a shift. I think I would have done that differently. You know, also learning how to say no, because when you're a nurse, you know, you're always being asked for more, more shifts. You know, can you stay a couple hours late? You know, overtime. And, you know, there's also that money factor, wanting to make more, you know, having that define your success. But, you know, that money, it's very elusive, it's very alluring, but you have your health too. And I don't think it was worth sacrificing my health, because all this stress, it piles up, you know, especially through COVID. One of the things I really thought about was doing something for healthcare workers too, to manage the stress. There's going to be a lot of trauma after COVID, and nurses, especially younger, you know, in their 20s and their 30s, they're not even going to realize it. But you know, your sleep is affected. I mean, I still have nightmares about working as a nurse, and I wasn't on the front lines during COVID. It was bad enough in administration.
Yeah.
But you know, taking time for yourself and you know, realizing that you're not bulletproof and that the stress of the job does affect you, and to take time to manage that stress and do the things that you need to do to take care of yourself.
Yeah. That's very important.
And get off a night shift as soon as possible. it's a risk factor for so much.
I see.
It's so sad. Like, who's going to work nights then? But I, you know, when I got off of nights, when I found out it was a risk factor for cancer. So, and also I have Meniere's disease too, which is it's an inner ear disorder, and it caused dizziness. And then I would be dizzy every morning around 5. So then I had to get off of nights.
I see. Well, we are talking about self-care and managing stress and sometimes, you know, they sound like a very big process that takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. And like you said, you were doing it after your work, but can you also give us a little bit clues, like maybe an example of what people can do during their work time? Not only nurses, but everybody, like who is working in their like in the middle of the day, some like maybe little practices that can benefit them.
Yeah. So, you know, take your break.
Yes.
We all would work. I would always work through my lunch or whatever. You know, it's funny, as I smoked until I was 26. And we would all go down and have a cigarette. You know, it's amazing how many healthcare workers smoked back then. I'm not sure how it is now, but we'd all go smoke. I mean, that was a break. But when I quit smoking, that went away. Mm-hmm. So still take that break. Take those breaks. Get away. Get off of the floor. You know, and this goes for any stressful job. You know, take those breaks. Unwind. And then, you know, there is a lot of like little like 5-minute things that you can do, like box breathing, which is a, you know, it's a breathing exercise, and it helps regulate the nervous system. One of my favorite is it's called the 5-finger meditation, and it's a tactile thing as well as with the breathing. So you know, you breathe up as you're going up and then out as you're going down, and you know, you go back and forth on your finger, and that just takes a couple of minutes, but it's amazing how that easy little exercise and how much relaxed you can feel after doing it. And it only takes like 3 minutes. And like a progressive muscle relaxation. These are all like just little exercises that you can do in 3 to 5 minutes that can just regulate your nervous system from that high level stressful state, and, you know, brings some calm. It's temporary as it might be.
Yes, but still, you know, like taking your mind from that stressful subject to something else. Giving that break to your mind.
And also, you know, just changing your mindset. I remember I would work with somebody, and I remember thinking about her. I mean, she only has one speed. How does she do that? Like almost being irritated because she would never get all, you know, running around. And well, she did it right. Yeah. I was doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Running around trying to do everything. So now I know.
Well, that can lead me to my three questions for you. Maybe we answer them a little bit, but I want to go over them and see if there is anything else that you would like to add. But my first question is, what were the breaking points in your 30s and how did they change your life?
Okay. So, you know, one big thing that happened in my 30s is I broke my ankle. When I first started getting into rock climbing, I was just so passionately in love with it, and I was probably went too fast, and what my desire to do things surpassed my ability, you know, my knowledge and my experience, and I fell like 20 to 30 feet, and I broke my ankle really bad. And you know that, of course, I developed arthritis in that very quickly afterwards, because it put on a lot of weight. And my ankle's not normal. It'll never be normal again. So that was a huge, you know, breaking point, and not all bad, because it taught me to care for myself. It taught me what it was like to be a patient, some very valuable lessons came from that. But I also wish I knew what I knew now when I was recovering from that, so that maybe it would have made a difference, maybe not. Because I also, you know, I also had a lot of things that I needed to work on in myself that I didn't discover until my 40s.
I see.
You know, recovering from like childhood trauma and stuff like that, that allowed me to make the choices that I needed to make out of self-love instead of shame, right? In our... You know, when you're younger, you want to lose weight so you look good, you know, so you're not, you don't look fat. But I don't feel those are the right, that's not always the right motivation to make the changes that we need to make. So maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. Maybe it would have. It's hard to say.
I think it makes a difference. You know, for example, in my situation too, when I ask my clients about their goals, and when they list their goals, I also ask them who those goals are for, you know, because sometimes we create those goals not only for ourselves but for other people, like you said, for our appearance, or for somebody told us to do this, that's why we are doing it. So I think when the motivation doesn't come from inside, at one point you stop working toward that goal.
Yeah.
You stop your motivation doesn't go through that goal. So I think if maybe you can get advices from other people, you can get some feedback from other people, but designing your goal and working toward that goal that others are created for you, I think doesn't work. Let's say 99.9% of the
time. Yeah. And even in my program, I teach that. I teach that once you know what's going on in your body and how your choices affect, and it's going to affect your future and a year from now, and how much you can enjoy doing things and what you'll be able to and to not go. When you understand that, I call it, you know, you're empowering yourself with knowledge, and it becomes easier to say, I'm not going to eat any more sugar, for example. It becomes easier to make that choice when you're confident that this is what it's doing to me if I do, and this is how my life is going to be better if I don't.
Mm-hmm. And I think we are jumping from one subject to another, but your expertise is so inspiring. So when you are cutting sugar, do you, so you don't eat it at all, or do you sometimes, for example, allow yourself to have a treat, or like, you know, if you go somewhere, if people are offering you something, do you take it if you really want it?
So most of the time I don't really want it anymore. Mm-hmm. So sugar, you know, sugar, it does have an addictive potential.
Yes.
So I'll say for like the first year I had none, I wouldn't have any, because I kind of had to break that. I mean, I would get a bag of, I loved sour candies, like summer sour gummy worms or whatever, and I would just pound through the whole bag, stuff like that. Now, like on Thanksgiving, my significant other, he went out and got a pumpkin pie for himself, and he kept asking me, I had no desire for it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, a month before, we went out to eat, and there was three of us, and we split a dessert, and I had a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I make sure it's going to count. Like, so much stuff that has sugar in it, it's just, it's crap.
Yeah.
Like, I talk about those cheap cookies that you get at the market. Do they really taste good, or are they just satisfying that craving for sugar, that dopamine rush that we get?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I might go months without it, and then there might be a month where I'll have something. Mm-hmm. I don't let the holidays dictate it to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, happens. It'll happen.
Making wiser choices, and also eating at least what it's worth, you know, like not eating for eating, but eating to enjoy it.
Yes.
To have really the desire to eat that thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you feel it when you eat sugar, when you haven't had it for a while. And I almost think that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
You feel it. It's like that rush.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel that addictive potential. And that almost makes it easier to, like, once you acknowledge that feeling, because you haven't felt it in such a long time, that, okay, this is it. This is, you know, just for now, and not something that you have to fall back into that pattern where you need to be eating sugar every day.
Yeah. So we go to my second question. One thing you swore by in your 30s that you don't believe in anymore. It can be a habit, a thought, or anything.
I think for me, in my 30s, I was still into that party mode. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, food and drinking was still a part of having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I swore by, that I didn't think I'd ever be able to give up. But, you know, when push came to shove, yeah, I could give it up. And, you know, even now it's like I limit that, right? I don't go out to eat as often. And also I have like one beer. I have actually, what I do is I just have a beer to celebrate a climb. So if I have like a big day afterwards, and even that isn't really necessary even more. I think we have these things that we think we enjoy and that we're not going to ever let go of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like same rule applies to this one too. I think balancing it out, and also trying to see if it's really worth it, right? To go to that party every day, not to different parties every day, or maybe be more selective and still go out, still enjoy, still maybe stay up late one night, but then recover it the next day, mm-hmm. next couple of days, so that our body and mind can also recover from it, right?
Yes.
And our last question. If your 30-year-old self would be sitting right across you right now, what would you tell her to do or not to do, or to be careful with?
You know, I would say to her that the choices that you make today are going to affect you for the rest of your life, even those little choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I said this before, you know, I wish I knew then what I knew now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of this science didn't know then.
Yeah.
And it knows it now. So I I can't beat myself up for it.
Of course, of course.
But, you know, if I had, you know, paid more attention to my health in my 30s, you know, my joints would be better now. If I watched my diet more, if I got daily movement in instead of just pounding on the weekends, you know, things like that, then I wouldn't, you know, my joints would be better today.
Yep.
And I've been able to turn a lot of it around, but there's always better.
Of course, of course. But I hope, you know, people who are listening this episode, they will find something that relates to them and maybe start to change or start asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And seek for information.
Yeah.
So if they need more information and maybe get your services, join to your program, how they can do it, can you please explain the process to us?
Okay. So there'll be a link with this episode,
yes.
Correct? So you, there'll be an episode link to the program. You can also find me on Instagram, at Arthritis Health Coach,
mm-hmm.
on Instagram. And I post a lot of information. I try to post every day. I hope that I can continue that.
Wow, that's a very stressful thing too.
I know. Well, you got to get a system in. And also, if you do skip a day, it's not the end of the world.
Yes.
And then I also have the Facebook group, the Women with Osteoarthritis mm-hmm. Facebook group, where I also have, I have a lot of videos on there. I also have a YouTube channel mm-hmm. that I'm trying to keep up, but again.
Okay. Well, and your program, if they want to join your program, do you do like an introductory call? How does that process?
No, it's a pretty low cost program. I wanted to make it accessible
mm-hmm.
to as many people. I do have higher levels, but the basic membership program is a very affordable. You know, once they purchase, you know, there's the page will explain everything that's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And once they get in, they can get in and look around and cancel at any time.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I think this topic is very important, not only for women in their 30s, or younger women, or who are beyond their 30s. And I think it all end up at the self-care and being aware of what is working for you and what is not working for you, and how to turn around.
Yeah. And, you know, and also never, and you know, no matter what your condition, if you get the diagnosis, never stop looking for answers.
Yeah.
Always keep pushing. You know, so there's a lot of different diagnoses out there that seem pretty depressing and dismal and like they don't have any hope, but there's stuff out there that, you know, one doctor might know, but the other one doesn't, you know, going to multiple providers, just always, I hear so many stories about this where, you know, you go to one provider and they say there's nothing that they can do, but they keep going. And then finally they find an answer. You know, I think that's so, so important. You know, your health is so important.
Okay.
And also, you know, just doing all those, even if you're healthy, doing all those things we're supposed to do every year, those screenings.
Of course, of course. We have to be our own advocates, right?
Absolutely.
We have to, like you said, keep asking the questions that are bothering us, keep seeking the information from different sources,
mm-hmm.
And discover what is working for us and what is not working for us.
Because ultimately, you know, we're our own experts.
Of course.
Of our bodies.
And mind. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Well, Valerie, thank you so much. It was great to have you.
You can also learn more about Mastering Your 30s Club and group programs and all the information about my guest at www.healthandco.com/masteringyour30s. Can you or somebody you know be a great guest for this podcast? Please fill out our guest form at www.masteringyour30s.com. Listen to the new episodes of Mastering Your 30s wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Until next time, be good to yourself.